Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 171 on Tuesday, the 27th of March, 2018. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we'll be talking about an ambulance chaser asking who wants to try and get some money out of Volkswagen. Waymo picks Jaguar I-Paces. And there's apparently £100 million for potholes, thanks to our benevolent government.
Yes, lots of breaking stories tonight. Before we get started, quick apology. Speak, Alan. A quick apology to our patrons. There's no live stream this week. I'm really sorry. It's
technology once more has thwarted us by not being very technological.
No, it's not really that. It's remote connectivity generally has let us down, I think it's a fair way of saying it.
Yes. Can't wait for driverless cars, Alan.
Haha. Oh, don't start. Anyway, before you get to the driverless cars, I'll just set you off down the path of Dieselgate. Away you go.
Thank you. Yes, the...
I would say any time, but we've been doing that for 2.5 years. So.
Yes. Hey-ho, it's back again. This time in the UK, though. The ambulance chasers that I mentioned earlier are the legal firm Slater and Gordon, who are bringing action against Volkswagen in this country. To help their case, they have done a survey of, just getting the figures now, 17,000 people who were asked, now you've had the new software fix, how do you think your car is? And of course, 40%, I actually expected it to be much higher than this, but 40% have said that they... Well, actually, 11,600 out of the 17,000 said that they had received a new software, and 40% of those had said it had negatively affected their car. Now, when this all came up originally, we did say, hang on, how many of these people could reliably inform us what their fuel economy was, what the running was like, and how well these people actually had their cars serviced.
So, can I chip in with this?
Yes, please do.
So, a friend of mine who has since fled the country, she doesn't listen, I can say whatever I want, but she and her husband had a Golf Estate, which had done 100 and many thousand miles, and they had the post-Dieselgate, despite the fact that no laws have been broken in the UK, of course, fix. And she said actually post that, the car had never run as... It did not run as well as it did before. And I happen to know that that they were always fastidious with their maintenance. Their last car was a... The last car had been a Vectra diesel estate, which had done well over a quarter of a million miles, and was still running fine.
Wow. You know,
mechanically. Yeah, exactly. So they take care of their cars and they look after it. And she was saying that really that it had had a negative impact on their Golf Estate. So I can believe that that's the case, because at least one person whom I trust has said this.
I can believe that there are a number of people who have been affected, yes. I do not believe it is the figures that have been claimed.
That
for the
is
reasons
true.
Exactly what I said before. I bet if you went up to most people in the street, how many would be able to tell you what their MPG is? How many would be able to say, spot the difference between the running of their vehicle? Because most people don't pay attention to these things. They get in, they turn a key, the car works, they go off. It gets low on fuel, they put fuel in, they go off again. Unless there is a big difference in those numbers, people will not notice it. I am suggesting for the vast majority of people who are just trying to get through the day. But if you ask a question, I mean, and in the Autocar article, it's clear that Volkswagen and I appear to be aligned in our thoughts on this. You know, you say, oh, we're doing a class action against Volkswagen because of Dieselgate. Who wants some cash is effectively what's being said.
You may well say I couldn't possibly comment, although I agree entirely with you.
Yeah. So we'll see because this is going through the preliminary phases in the courts now, and we'll see if it moves forward, and if it does, how much of this, you know, what the British judges and legal system actually thinks of this. Because, as we've said repeatedly, whilst we don't agree with what Volkswagen has done, they haven't actually broken anything, any laws over here or in Europe yet. That has not been proven.
Yes. So, speaking of companies that have not been proven to have broken the law, and diesel vehicles, drivers in the US are trying to form a, supposedly tens of thousands, are trying to form a class action lawsuit in the US against BMW. This is specifically on vehicles built between 2009-2011.
X5s and 335 diesels.
It's X5s, 335 diesels sold in the US. Again, this is being brought by owners, as opposed to by the government. So this is,
it's not the states. This is individuals. Brought together under the wing of Steve Berman, who does take a manufacturer to court, doesn't he?
He does, very much so. So just whenever you start hearing about that stuff, it's a very different situation to most of the Volkswagen stuff in the US, which was turned into a criminal investigation, and it was the various states of the United States of America against Volkswagen. This is different. This is owners who believe that they, in some way, shape, or form, have suffered at the hands of BMW.
But reading through the Bloomberg article that will be linked in the show notes, what I don't understand is that Steve Berman is saying that these that are illegal. These are illegal, and BMW shouldn't have sold them. But yet the governments and the states are not seeming to side with that angle and are not taking BMW to court.
This is, that's how I read it as well, yes.
Yeah. BMW obviously denies that they have been illegal in any way, and they deny that there is any manipulation.
I'd have declined to immediately comment on the lawsuit. Steve Byrne, by the way, the plaintiff's attorney, has, according to this, filed similar claims against Ford Motor Company, Mercedes-Benz, Fiat Chrysler, General Motors, and Volkswagen. So, bit of a pattern. That's all I'm saying. Bit of a pattern.
If you have diesel engines in your range and you're selling in America, expect a letter from this gentleman soon.
Yes. We're going to stop there, Andrew, before he sends us a letter.
Well, no, it's what he seems to be going through, doesn't it? So
it does, absolutely. Absolutely seems to be the case. So, yep.
Right, so more follow-up, though.
Yeah.
Obviously,
fair chunk in this bit.
Yeah, obviously, since we last recorded, a lot more news has come out about the terrible Uber accident. There's been lots of things written. There has been an awful lot of guesswork done by people, and we're not, as we said last week, we're not prepared to pass that on, because, you know, that's not what we're about, and we don't think you listeners would appreciate if we started doing that sort of thing.
There's been an awful lot of hypocrisy as well.
Mm.
So many, particularly tech outlets, that were singing the praise of autonomous vehicles and putting people
telling us how they're going to be around the corner as well. Telling us that they are
around the corner.
Or any day now, you're going to be flooded with them. The human driver is a thing of the past. Yeah.
All of a sudden, switch flicked right back the other way to, oh my goodness, how could this possibly have happened? And it's like, well, it happened because you were reporting on these things in an incredibly ridiculous manner and not actually looking at, you know, reality. It's one of the reasons why we don't quote many of these sources and we don't use them for this show. to the stage where actually I made, we changed the source earlier on, not because the story was bad, but because whoever had chosen the picture was so far off the ball with it that for you, our audience, you would just have dismissed the rest of the story as rubbish because the picture editing was so bad.
We do think of you all.
We really do. Yeah, well, mostly we're thinking of ourselves. But you guys come into it too.
So close, Helen. We had an opportunity that then people would have known that we were being disingenuous and, you know,
well,
false.
Well, yes, I felt I had to balance it. I just couldn't keep on going. And it's still happening, to be honest. Some of these, I don't know if stuff was scheduled beforehand, but some of the technology news outlets right at the minute are suffering from terrible, terrible schizophrenia.
Yes.
On one hand, this is terrible. This could have been stopped. Why were management not doing this? Why did they only have one person in the vehicles? Why were they not paying attention?
But it's what we've been saying for ages. Why has one of them been
and the other side, they're going, this is awesome. Look at this awesome self-driving technology. It's going to be here any day now. Look at these awesome people whom we're damning on the other hand. And it's just
but it's what
ridiculous.
We've been saying for ages as well, isn't it, Alan? We've been saying for ages, please stop saying autonomous when it is driver assistance. We've been saying, can you please start asking some hard questions along the lines of everyone's talking about AI, but that doesn't fulfill any safety critical software criteria. You know, questions now. We need everybody who talks about self-driving cars, and I'm putting this plea out again, start asking really hard questions to these people. Don't let them off the hook. I truly believe the vast majority of companies and people who are involved in this are trying to do this for good reasons, and they want to do it right and all the rest of it. But unless they are being pushed hard and they're being asked pertinent questions that get to the nub of these problems rather than, oh, what am I going to be able to do while I'm eating my pizza in the self-driving car going home from work? You know, ask some really hard things like, no, you say this, what do you actually mean? But that does involve all of us having to learn about this ourselves as well, because we can't, otherwise we're just asking from an ignorant position, which means we ask silly questions like, what adverts are you going to play inside these cars?
Yeah. So normally at this point, I would make fun of Andrew for being a total and utter paranoid. On this one, I'm not. Do we want to run through some of the stories that we've got linked?
Yeah,
we're
putting all these into one segment. We're not going to do separate follow-ups on all this because, like we said, there's been a lot of information come out since there's been a lot of soul searching. There's been a lot of hand wringing by various interested parties. But also there's been some really good stuff that's come out that is worth taking notes and paying attention to. First one, I think, was the one that you picked out, Alan, about Uber's, or how it seems Uber's cars, autonomous test cars, were lagging behind the competition.
Yeah. So supposedly, to give you a quick idea of this in 90 seconds-ish, according to the report that we've got linked, in this case from Jalopnik, but in other sources too, then Uber's cars were struggling to meet the 15 miles per intervention. That's 15 miles between a human person. Tautology in action there. Having to actually intervene and stop and hit the button or hit the brakes or use the steering wheel to correct the vehicle. To give you an idea of the scale of that, supposedly Waymos are hitting over 1,300 miles between interventions.
Yeah.
I deliver that piece of information, but without comment.
Yep. Yep. No, so that Jalopnik article will be in the show notes,
yeah,
for everybody to read.
Arizona's governor has ended Uber's self-driving car tests within the state indefinitely.
He had no choice. I am, to be honest, I am surprised he hasn't stopped all self-driving.
So am I.
Considering what has been picked out of and reposted on social media of statements he's made, which now, with the wonderful tool of hindsight, which we get to use, thankfully, the comments he's made have not reflected well on the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I imagine there's been some petitioning from other tech companies to say, look, we don't do it like that. But that is pure supposition on my part.
Yep.
Next up, the Uber supposedly had disabled some of Volvo's standard safety systems in the XC90 in question, which would or should have forced the vehicle to at least have hit the brakes.
Yep.
At the very last second, which supposedly didn't happen. The video is out there, by the way, on social media and many places. You can watch it. I've watched it. It stops just before the moment. It's not very pleasant watching. I watched it once.
No, but that video has raised lots of questions. It's raised questions on statements that came out.
I think it's raised a lot of valid ones.
Yes, it has. It's raised a lot of questions that have come out from statements that came out from the police very quickly on the back of having a look at just one video. And I saw lots of silliness as well, because we have to remember that the camera is only as good as the sensors in it. It is not the equivalent of the human eye, which some people seem to have real trouble with. So no matter how many megapixels, it's still, and that didn't look like it had many megapixels, to be fair. It's not the human eye
that was put out anyway,
and it is not the radar or LiDAR systems, which should have. Or the questions are, why was the poor victim not spotted on those systems?
But to me, the one that, if you don't read any of the others, the one you need is quite long. It's by Alex Roy. It's on The Drive, and it's entitled "Elaine Hertzberg's Death Isn't Uber's Tragedy, It's Ours," and it takes a really interesting look at the sociological aspects, I think is a fair way of putting it.
Yep.
Around self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles, etc. There, and it is well worth your time. If there's nothing else that you read as a result of this week's show, then that is the one to get.
And if you don't,
it out
if,
really quite quickly.
Yeah. If you don't like the to read, there are two Autonocast episodes which I will have linked in as well that were from last week that are very good in the way that they cut through, as the Autonocast does. It cuts through the nonsense and gets and they're people who know about autonomous vehicles and know about the area in question as well, so they are able to ask each other intelligent questions about this and to have an intelligent conversation about it. So it's not pleasant listening by any stretch of the imagination, but it's certainly eye-opening. And if you are at all now very curious about autonomous vehicles and where we're at with how they're being tested and everything else, listen to them and follow Ed Niedermeyer and Alex and Karen as well, because they really know their onions.
They do. Yes. So I'd missed the two new episodes.
Yeah, well, there's three, because they've also got one with Chris Bangle, which is special for a totally different reason.
They're stuff that's good. So please do that.
Right, moving on, Alan, and
one last piece of follow-up.
Yes, and
this is like wading through a sea of follow-up.
Well, yes, who knew within a week that Transport for London's or the transport strategy for London would completely fall apart already?
I think Greenpeace did. It's a report in The Independent. which is by the political correspondent of The Independent. And anytime I see stuff written about transport or dare I use the term mobility, and I'm so sorry, by the political correspondent, then instantly my BS antenna start buzzing. And that does tend to be the case here, I'm afraid. So this is mostly an article. Greenpeace are saying that all the strategy that we talked about last week is not a disaster for all the reasons we talked about last week. It's because the government has performed, oh, where is it? I've lost it. A tire burning U-turn.
Yes.
Because they are not delivering, because they're not initiating a national scrappage scheme for diesel vehicles.
Now, there's a couple of points on this, isn't there, Alan?
Which is ridiculous.
Well, yes, it is very ridiculous, because one, no scrappage scheme was ever announced for diesels. Two, it was a consultation document. And three, they said they would consider it, but would have to, in considering it, they have to look at the pros and cons, and have decided that it's incredibly difficult to sort out a diesel scrappage scheme, which could be taken advantage of. They make it clear that these schemes can be taken advantage of people. But what they have not ruled out, they've not said scrappage schemes can't happen, though, have they?
No, they haven't. There is one other part to that, which is building a new car uses far more resources than running an old one and maintaining an old one.
Mm.
Okay, so actually, you know what, Greenpeace? If people were building more cars, you'd be complaining then as well.
They'd be stopping the boats getting in, or some sort of foolish PR stunt like that. Oh, no, they have done.
Quite.
So what local councils are able to do, they are able to take advantage of the Clean Air Fund. And I think there's $220 million in that Clean Air Fund. And they can just put forward plans, and that can get approved, and they can get the money. And do it in at a local level. So, Mr. Khan, You demanded a nationwide one. However, you will still be able to do one in London. Just fill out those forms correctly.
Because I'm sure that you will. Are you going to hold your breath until that happens?
No, not at all. No. Anyway, that is enough of follow-up. We are now on to new news.
Oh, finally.
Mm.
What are we talking about in new news, Andrew?
Well, taking a complete departure from what we have been talking about. Let's talk about autonomous vehicles testing on roads.
Goodness, that's a radical... That's a tyre burning U-turn there, isn't it?
Yes.
Tell me more, though.
There's a smidgen of a claim that 30% of congested urban traffic is due to drivers looking for parking spaces.
That seems awfully high to me.
Yes.
I'm sorry, that is awfully high.
That does seem a little bit high to me too. But this is all part of the UK Auto Drive project, which has got Ford, Jaguar Land Rover, Tata together working to test different aspects of autonomous vehicles on selected routes that the public are on as well. And this one hopes to share real-time parking spaces and where people can go park, and then that information can get fed to other connected vehicles. And if you're searching for a parking space, the car will direct you to that space in a controlled manner, where hopefully there's no fisticuffs of "I saw it first."
Yes. Well, you'd hope that they book it whenever they spot it. The vehicle would book the space.
I would presume it's nearest first or something like that.
Or some sort of form of token.
Yeah, I presume there's brains enough involved in this project, because if you come up with this sort of scheme, you've got to be a little bit clever. I put it to you, sir. But I would suggest that they've hopefully thought through these scenarios. And there are people who've been in cars, that sort of thing.
You can imagine the Ford Mondeo Hybrid and the Range Rover ganging up on the Tata Hexa.
Is this where the next new cyber war is? People who hack to put people to the back of the queue. Fords will go first. Jaguars can go last. Quick. Tappity tappity tap. Copy off GitHub.
But the idea. The real idea of this, I'm just going to ignore that. The real aim of this is so that summoning your vehicle can happen, or so that it can drop you at a convenient location, and then it can go and park in a park and ride or somewhere on the outskirts of the town, rather than circulating in town. And then whenever you're going to need it, you can say, well, I'm here.
Well, I have 15 minutes. Yeah, I have seen quite a few conversations on social media along the lines of, look, people are forgetting parking is the new battleground for autonomous vehicles, because this is where local councils and local governments can actually make a lot of money. Is if they set up, if they suddenly understand how important parking is, and not in a, let's call it 70p an hour type way, but, you know, really understand where parking fits in the whole,
or just in the whole connected way of things,
isn't it? It's you know, got to look at a journey as a continuous set of different steps. And seeing how all these parts have to get connected together. And I sound like such a hippie now I'm saying that. I'm so sorry.
No, you're not. But do you know why I'm laughing at you?
We really have to start looking at everything like this rather than just one little aspect isolated. Because it's got us to the mess we're in today.
Yeah, sorry. The reason I'm chortling at what you're saying is I was involved a couple of years ago with a European joint undertaking to do that, but for the aviation industry. And this is where we now say again,
the motoring, mobility, that whole sector, once again needs to look at the aerospace sector and go, how did they get to where they are today, where it is generally quite easy to get on a flying brick and get to the other end alive with your stuff.
My flight's now going to be delayed tomorrow night. Thank you, Andrew. No, honestly, the idea of that, the idea of the, if I may bore you a little bit about air traffic management, is that the CESAR joint undertaking, I did a little bit of work for, a very tiny bit. And it's all about, instead of thinking of the different phases of flight, of a flight, so being at the gate, taxiing, takeoff, cruise, approach, landing, taxiing again to the gate, then actually it's all planned as one thing, from start to finish. And really what's been happening so far is autonomous vehicles have been very good at that, what I'm going to call the cruise section in the middle. But the initial parts, but actually planning through to dropping you off and then going and parking somewhere. If you know what time you'll be arriving, so, and this is the whole thing, is if you know and you plan it as one, you should be able to say, I will be arriving at this time. So there should be no need to circulate for parking spaces. It should be a case of basically driving straight in to the parking space that you know that is there for you, because your vehicle has pre-booked you that parking space at the start of your journey. Mm. So, in theory, there should be a minimal number of spare parking spaces at any one time. It should be very much one out, one in.
Yeah.
In these kinds of setups. And that means that you have fewer parking spaces. And it shrinks everyone thing down. If you can do that full end-to-end, that full end-to-end piece.
Yeah. Yeah. If.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that until we started that discussion. Thank you.
That's okay, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right, sticking with Jaguar though, Alan. Next bit.
Sticking with Jaguar, yeah. So the other part. So we've just been talking about going from from end to end, and we were talking about the final little part there. But breaking news today, Jaguar Land Rover have announced a tie-in with Waymo, who, of course, have already been mentioned in this who've already been mentioned in this show. And and so they've signed up to procure up to 20,000, okay, let me say that again, up to 20,000 Jaguar eyepieces to use their to become their test fleet in New York, in the UK, all around the place, essentially.
Yeah, first things first, huge congratulations to Jaguar on that.
This is a major coup. That's what I was going to say. This is a major
absolutely
coup for the guys.
Congratulations that your vehicle has been seen as a perfect testbed for Waymo. You know, that because I don't imagine that was ever an expectation when they started the project. Possibly a hope when you saw other companies getting their cars signed up by Waymo and other people, but 20,000, wow,
in the first 2 years,
just wow.
Supposedly that's the aim. The idea is that these are going to be within, many of them within New York, to be a sort of taxi test bed essentially. So in theory you could summon a Waymo carriage, which takes the form of an eyepiece with some lumps added onto the top and the sides and the front. That's a humongous, well done guys, that's a humongous accolade, because that gives huge visibility,
yes, as well. Yes, right, well I think with all the follow-up and the smidgen of new news we've managed to cover so far, I think we're about halfway, huh?
We're probably past halfway, to be honest, this week.
Passed out.
But it is. No, not yet. We're pretty close to it. It is that point in the show where I remind you about our Patreon, a way you can support the Motoring Podcast by donating a small amount of money every month. If you'd like to know more and of the different levels we suggest and what you can get in return, then head to motoringpodcast.com and click on the orange Become a Patron button on the front page of the site. If you're already a patron, then we love you lots. Thank you. Thank you
we
so
do.
Much. We're really sorry you don't have the opportunity to see us this evening.
Yes.
As well, as I'm sure you are too. We do understand, of course, that not everyone has spare cash lying around to help support a podcast such as this. So please don't forget to like, rate, and leave feedback via the podcast player of your choice. Just a quick note, whilst we're at this point, thank you for all the feedback on the i30N twin test review thingy. There has been an awful lot of feedback on that, and it's all been positive, and thank you.
Yeah, we're glad you enjoyed that.
Yes.
We enjoy doing
We do enjoy doing these things. It's kind of fun. We know that car tests are not our primary shtick. And there's a lot of competition out there for that kind of stuff. So your kind words mean a lot on all topics, but on that one in particular. So thank you. Thank you. I think we're the only people to have done the two versions of the i30 back to back and not actually use a Volkswagen Golf.
Yes, I did search a lot trying to find someone who's done that, but nobody had done that. So I'm really chuffed we're the first to do that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So cheers to the guys at Hyundai as well for making that one possible. It's always worth saying thanks, because they do give us a little extra help with that.
Yep, absolutely. Right. Motorsport.
Motorsport.
Right, this was nearly follow-up, but there was so much in follow-up it wouldn't fit. But last time we talked about World Rally Championship, there was the art... We discussed how WRC... asked all the teams, please don't do anything a bit embarrassing at the special stages or the power stages.
Just makes us all look silly.
Because it makes us look silly, and we might just be sat here while we're waiting for someone to start on the track so that clears it for everyone else, please. And everyone would turn around and went, nope, not going to listen to that, because now someone's done it, we all have to do it. So now, as we suggested at the time, perhaps the only way to prevent this was to bring out a rule change that said you can't do that. WRC has made a rule change to say they can't do that.
Oh, good. Because it was kind of... That's what it needed. It was what it needed, because you know what race teams are like. Winning is a lot of money for these big teams. And as you say, they'd all held off a little bit. And then M Sport?
Yeah.
Went off and did it.
Yeah.
And so from there on, it was then fair game to do, because somebody had done it first.
Yep, absolutely. So fortunately, common sense has been seen, or you know, reality has been spotted. More to the point.
Yeah. So they've done what they were kind of hoping not to have to do, but yeah.
Yep. Right, Alan, we have some good news now.
It's that time of the year when all of our roads are suffering.
Especially with the weather.
As a result of the weather, yeah. As a result of the weather and...
End of year budgets.
Well, that's what's going to come up. But the government has confirmed that it's going to provide £100 million for governments, for councils, pardon me, across Britain to help fix some of these potholes.
That sounds good news, Alan, but is it quite?
Well, it adds on to the £75 million that has already been promised by the Transport Secretary.
That's fantastic.
Action Fund and another £46 million from the Highways Authority. And the aim is that about 7 million potholes will be filled with that money. So,
cool.
Hang on a minute. I'm trying to work out how much that is. That's 175 million. This, we never do live maths. 221 million. Okay. So if that's filling 7 million potholes, so that's 221 divided by 7 is going to be about 30 quid a pothole or something.
Yeah, that all stacks up.
It's not a lot of money, really.
When there's a van,
sorry,
and four people, and all the materials,
you're filling a lot of potholes every day.
Well, also it doesn't actually sound much, considering figures are suggesting, according to this Autocar article written by Sam Sheehan, that it's going to take 14 years and £9.3 billion to repair Britain's roads properly.
Yeah, to get all the local bikes back to reasonable states. And I completely understand that. I mean, some of the ones around me are pretty shocking. I mean, even just getting from my house.
Well, when you get your Yaris Grimm and you come to visit me, I'm going to have to give you a route. Otherwise, you will have no spine by the time you arrive.
No, it's not that.
No, not your car. Our roads.
Yeah, well,
it's not. It's not. I am not making any comment about your car at all. It doesn't matter what car you've got. Some of them round our way are. I mean, last time you were up there, pretty poor, but they are appalling now. Yeah. Absolutely, there are routes I know, because I've talked to local taxi drivers in my town, and there are routes they deliberately will avoid now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
crazy. Considering my town runs on a one-way system. And they're desperately trying to get away from most of the one-way system and going down small, tiny residential streets to avoid it.
Yeah, but as is also pointed out here, this you know, not fixing these potholes is actually costing the councils in the long run.
It's what we've said, isn't it? It's what we've said about it. Everyone's looking at it year on year instead of a huge long...
But they're not encouraged to look at it over time. Because they're going to be, you know, there's going to be someone else in all the while. But it's cost to, it cost last year alone £7.3 million in compensation to people whose vehicles had been damaged by potholes and by Britain's roads. Mm. So the longer that they leave this, the worse and worse and worse it's going to become.
Yep. And am I right in thinking, Alan, because I'm sure I've read this somewhere, but if your car is damaged via a pothole, you can claim that back off the... You have a chance of claiming that back off the local council.
Yes, I've never had to do it myself, but
there is criteria, and you,
there are criteria.
You need
yeah.
to you need I, to look it up. But you, if your car is damaged by a pothole, or whether it's the tire gone, or whether it even worse destroys the alloy or damages the suspension or something, there is mechanisms in place to approach your local council to get money back for that.
Yes. Thankfully, I haven't had to do it. I tend to buy cars that are small enough to be able to wiggle around many of these things, although it's not always possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, more good news.
This is good news. I like this this news.
There is a new hydrogen fueling station that has been opened by Shell, or added to a Shell petrol station at Beaconsfield.
Well, the main... The coolest thing about this is the bit that you say it's been added to, because it is the first under the canopy, which sounds slightly dodgy, but honestly isn't, hydrogen fueling station in the UK. That means it's actually there along with your petrol and diesel and possibly LPG pumps. It's not like the one at Heathrow, which is its own little...
Go into the naughty corner.
Industrial space, yeah.
It's where the special people go over driven. There where we don't want them.
Yes, round the back of the Jury's Inn. Just fight your way through all the taxis that are waiting in the entranceway and have had to be kept out with a chain and a padlock. Although now it's an electric barrier. And you know, stand over here in this sort of weird area right under the flight path. This is actually integrated into like a normal place. For the first time, it's really cool.
Yeah, no.
And it's other motorway services.
Yes, yeah.
We just need another one in the Midlands, close to me, please.
I keep seeing arguments about electric's the way forward, and people saying, "Well, yeah, but there is hydrogen, but it costs so much, it's very inefficient to make it." Blah 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 blah. I really think we are going to go. There isn't going to be this is the system that cures all problems or this. These issues now are more complicated than that. We've seen by going just down an internal combustion engine, that is not the solution we need for ourselves and the planet. So there are going to be certain vehicles that need hydrogen to be the most efficient, and certain vehicles that need electric to be the most efficient and makes the most sense. And I think we need all these different alternatives. And the quicker that the infrastructure is put in place, as we've been promised by the government, although not really on hydrogen, but the quicker this is put in place and the quicker that the general public see it and then go, oh, hang on, actually an electric car makes sense for me. Or actually hydrogen is perfect for what I need now.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to do dripping around Britain for a while yet.
No.
But we have voiced an opinion. We have voiced to, well, not so much to Honda, but certainly to Toyota and Hyundai, who are the other two of the three people that sell / lease hydrogen fuel cell electric vehicles here in the UK, that we really would quite like to be involved in the first Land's End to John O'Groats.
Yeah.
By hydrogen, please. It's not possible yet. I know that I've certainly stood with someone from, with people from both Hyundai and Toyota and discussed it and sort of tried to plan it out and pointed out where the great big hole in the middle is. that means that we would love to do it.
Yeah.
I have an even more ambitious one, which I don't think is possible yet, which I've got in my mind. Regarding hydrogen vehicles, but yeah.
Cool. You have to tell me about that sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Right, more good news. Well, positive news.
is there more good news? Oh, it is positive news, yes. Sorry, I had actually
sorry to scare everybody that we're, you know, putting at least three articles of positive news out there.
Oh, well, we've got to.
For our own sanity.
So, again, some of these are relatively new. Some of them came out in kind of press releases and short blog posts yesterday without very much behind them. And this is slightly one of them. So Link and Co. Have announced their European launch plans and their rollout. So Link and Co. Have a funny name, but they are part of Geely.
Who seem to be doing it well.
Yeah, so Geely, who are doing it well. So, of course, that's the parent company of various parts of Geely Automotive in China. Volvo, of course, here in Sweden. I'm in Sweden. in Sweden. Lotus in the UK. Lotus there in the UK.
Yes,
as well as the London Electric Vehicle Company.
And most importantly, Proton. Because we have been without cars with riveted wheel arches for far too long.
They're not riveted wheel arches, mate. It's hex bolts that hold those on. Yes. Anyway, moving on from that. So Link & Co. is their aim to have a global mobility brand separate from maybe the ones that are traditional car makers as we think of them. And the idea is that they're connected and shareable around the world. So they are moving closer towards vehicle as a service, mobility as a service, some of these kind of buzzwordy things.
Yeah, and the idea they're building further on the subscription idea, aren't they, as well?
It is starting, yeah.
Which,
it's very much
after Volvo came out with that, more and more companies are dipping their toe in the water of subscriptions, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. Oh, but what's interesting about this is they're not just doing it from a car point of view. It's some of it, and this is why I included it, because we don't normally do car launches as part of the news show, really, unless it's something really special.
As if we've been there.
Either we've been there or if it's something significant, because we talked about the Chiron and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that they're not just doing the car. They're doing tie-ins with other aspects of brand around Link & Co. And what it makes me think of is the Will brand in Japan in the 1990s and the 2000s. I don't know if you remember those. The Will VI is the one that we all think of, which was a sort of Toyota Yaris chassis with that weird reverse rake back window.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, it's really odd looking. Even I think it's odd looking. I don't think it's attractive, but I think it's kind of cool because it's so different. Mm-hmm. But Will, I mean, we always think of the cars, but Will also did toasters. They did lifestyle stuff. They did sofas. They did home decor. They did the whole range of stuff. And it was an entire brand that happened to encompass cars. And I think it's very interesting that Geely, with this sub-brand and this mark within them, is going more for that. This is a lifestyle brand incorporating mobility rather than just being that one trick pony. And I think that's very interesting. So it's saying that it's inspired by the worlds of fashion and technology.
Apple.
I've lost the bit that I was going for now. And the witters on about brand pillars and all sorts of rhubarb. But I do think that the approach is...
Are you saying that we're not convinced by every bit of PR press releases that we always get, Alan? Are you?
No, and it's why we don't normally link to press releases, but there was nothing that actually went into this as much as their own press release, which I downloaded last night, along with many, many photos. So I was actually trying to find out if there was anything technical in the press release. There were a lot of photos. There were a lot of quotations from Swedish people.
Well, yeah, because it's all been designed and engineered by the team in Gothenburg, hasn't it?
It has, yes. By Volvo, really.
Shh, don't say that.
The team in Gothenburg.
Yes, correct.
Yes. So there's that. And I just thought it was an interesting concept. The more I hear about it, the more I think, you know, that might work. There is another one which I spotted somewhere in here. Where is it? there is a share button within the car. That was what got me, that I thought he's going to go ape if he reads that. And it might not have been in here.
Customers will find a range of connected technologies on offer in the vehicles, from a sharing function with the world's first in-car share button to wireless charging and dedicated Link and Co.
That's the one. It was on the news press link. What is it? What it doesn't tell you is what it's sharing. I quite often share in the car. You know, I share the bag of Suki Sweeties that I've got in the car. You know, that's...
He does do that.
I don't know what
it's
sharing.
For a fact, ladies and gentlemen, he does share sweets.
Yeah. Mm. That's because I'm nice.
You are.
And generous. And you know, I thought that was kind of weird and a little bit, okay. But I actually quite like, you know, I can pick out details like that we can laugh at. But actually, I quite like the concept. And I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Yeah. There yeah, no. I agree. It'd be interesting to see where this goes. As anyone who's listened to me for more than 30 seconds will guess, I am less than enamoured by perhaps all the things being suggested and on offer. However, they are going for it. I mean, they have gone big at this. It'd be interesting to see how people who buy the car or subscribe actually interact with it. Obviously, initially it's going to be, you know, early adopters, so they will be much more inclined to be positive about this sort of all the features available. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, am I just an old man on a porch shouting at clouds, or do people actually want this stuff as well?
Just so you know, the first brand store will open in Amsterdam, followed by Barcelona, Berlin, Brussels and London. I'm not sure if it's in that order or if that just happens to be alphabetical. And then there'll be offline stores which will tour, and we'll see what happens there. I haven't worked out if the car is yours. I think you do lease it and the car is actually there and yours. It's not as if other people are just like randomly coming up and using it whilst you've got it.
I don't think it's mobility service subscription. I think it's the car subscription.
Yes, I think it's car as it's
or vehicle.
Vehicle as a service as opposed to mobility as a service. That I was thinking about that earlier on, having spent some time talking about software as services today, and so it then started to make my head hurt, so I went for a lie down.
I don't blame you.
Because I'm very tired. There's no one finally this week. I couldn't find any light and interesting ones. The one I will give you is that until the end of tomorrow, the guys from Motoring Research are taking a Phantom to the Opera. They started off earlier on this evening from the Royal Opera House in London, and they are heading to the Opera House in Vienna, and they're trying to get there for the start of the whatever opera it is that's showing there tomorrow evening. So do follow.
I saw a picture tweeted on the.
I saw Tim showing off that the Rolls Phantom 8 that they're taking to do it is larger than his house.
It would be larger than mine as well.
Possibly larger than mine too. So do follow that. There's a distinct lack of man finally story tonight. Parish Notes.
Go back and listen to the i30N twin review if you haven't already.
Yes, and of course don't forget about Simon Browse's.
What a happy and positive man he is.
He does always seem that way, yes. I've not listened to it.
It was a genuine treat to talk to him. He's such a positive guy. And it was fab listening to how he got into it and how and why he does it as well.
If you still haven't listened to the one before, I still haven't finished J Ward's. I will finish it on the plane tomorrow night and then start Size. If you haven't listened to the one before, it's an absolute cracker. I think it's become one of my favourites, and I try not to say that in a bit of review. It's so interesting, just the amount of information and stories and stuff that are told in that one is an absolute fracas.
Well, spoiler alert, yesterday I saw on the 365 Days of Motoring, it was, was it 10 years ago that, I think it was 10 years ago that it was announced that Ford was selling Jaguar Land Rover to Tata. Wow. And that just came through the Twitter feed and I just happened to be on it to see it.
So there's a little bit of background about that and the sale of that from Jay. There's lots of background, lots of cool stuff about the current Ford GT as well, which is really sort of, wow, that's so cool. Stuff that must have been fantastic to be involved with. Please, do listen to Rear View. I love it. And the thing is that Andrew doesn't tell me what's happened in them. It's just that I sometimes see it. It sort of pops up as a for information in my calendar when he's speaking to people, so I know who's coming on, but he never tells me what they've talked about, and so it's always a surprise whenever I listen. I know who's coming, but I don't know what they've said, and so it's I get just as much delight out of them as you guys do, which is cracking. I've just been nice about Andrew. That's horrible.
Twice in this show.
Oh, I know.
It's all right. Normal service will be resumed shortly, no doubt.
Yeah. So, yes, so it's going to be a week of going back and just double-checking. We were going to stagger it with the i30N one, but thanks to the guys at Top Gear, we moved that one forward.
Yep.
Had we known it was going to be on Top Gear, we would have done it before Top Gear and then had the Vito one afterwards. But we didn't know that because there was no way to find out at that point.
No, shamefully, the team of Top Gear don't consult with us on what they're going to release.
I know, I am
disgusted.
On. Yes, same here. It'll happen, one day. Meanwhile, let's round up for the week. So don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback, share your thoughts on the show about Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget our Patreon, available at motoringpodcast.com/support, along with all the other ways to support us. And don't forget to leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. And we've noticed that more of you have been leaving reviews and star ratings and stuff. And thank you. Andrew, best way to get in touch with you, my friend?
Best way to get in touch with me would be via Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me there. And Alan, if people want to lambast you for saying nice things about me more than once in a show, what are the best ways for them to get in touch with you personally?
It's the Twitters again works best, where I'm at AJP Bradley, BRADLEY. I've just closed the window that says the last line, which I just cannot remember. We'll be back next week, but until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring. 171 of these things, and you'd think I'd have learned it by now.